Let's Talk PR and More.
Public relations, media, publicity, integrated communications, marketing, digital, reputation management, and more.
Let's Talk PR and More with award-winning PR strategist Sherry Goldman.
Hi, I'm Sherry Goldman, president of Goldman Communications Group, and welcome to Let's Talk PR and More. My guest today is Neha Bulani. Neha is a member of the Intellectual Property Group at CSG Law. Neha focuses on trademark and copyright matters related to brand assets, creative and artistic works, and publicity rights, ensuring that brands and companies' intellectual property rights are protected. And in today's world of the growing use of generative artificial intelligence, this is more important than ever before. So I'm so glad Neha is joining us today to discuss intellectual property and IP and AI. So welcome, Neha.
Thank you so much for having me, Sherry.
Great. Let's get started. Intellectual property is so important, but sometimes I think PR people don't even understand it clearly enough. So I think a good place for us to start is, what is intellectual property? And I know copyrights and trademarks are probably most relevant to PR, but tell me from your perspective, or what you is true, what is intellectual property and where does it fit in PR?
Sure. I think it's absolutely important for all professionals to understand the different types of intellectual property, because certain IP has implications specifically related to AI, which is the topic of today. But certainly in general, everything intersects with intellectual property, so it's certainly useful to have an understanding.
And most people don't know, so that's why you're here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the amount of times we get calls that are like, hey, I need to protect my patent. And you're like, well, you don't have a patent, but you have a trademark, so let's start there. You know, it happens all the time. So copyrights are artistic works. So that would be, your books, your films, music, artwork, written materials such as any PR piece. All of that is considered copyright. And that is protected under the Constitution. That's very important in the U.S. to protect and forward the arts and sciences. So similarly, patents are intellectual property with respect to inventions and new products, but the product itself, not the brand.
Okay.
Trademarks is the protection of the brand name, some of the assets that make that brand distinctive in the workplace and in the marketplace. So that would be your brand name, your tagline, maybe your distinctive packaging. If there's a specific component of your product that is distinctive, for example, the shape of the Milano cookie, for example, is a trademark. So there are different buckets of intellectual property. Some products, some brands, some businesses have all three, some only have one. So it really just depends on what the business is, what the services are, and based on what the business particularities are, someone might choose to, spend or invest in protecting one over the other.
So let me ask you a question before we even go even further. It's not automatic. You have to use a lawyer or something, but you have to protect it, right? You can't say, oh, I used the Apple for the Apple logo first, so nobody else can use an Apple logo.
So depends.
Okay.
For patents, you absolutely need to protect it and file for patent protection in order to get the full term of the exclusive right to sell that product or to utilize that invention. That is one where there's even a bar, like a one-year bar on disclosure. So if you, disclosed your invention 2 years ago, you might not be able to get a patent on it. So it's very important for patents. For trademarks in the United States, it's a first-to-use territory. So if you are using your trademark, this is interesting about trademarks, but there are geographical limitations, so it is important, and I'll get to that. So if you have a trademark and you've been using, your business name, let's say, in California, and you don't register your rights, you have prior rights, but it would be geographically limited to California. It would be hard to bring a claim against, especially if you're in a small town in California and you're not using the mark in what we call interstate commerce, you would have a hard time necessarily stopping somebody who has simultaneously been using the mark in, let's say, a small town in New Jersey where, again, it's not interstate commerce.
Okay.
But that said, there are many benefits for registering your trademark. The first being that it gives constructive notice to others that you do have a trademark. So if somebody was to, you know, do a trademark search through their lawyer, they would uncover your mark and it would, you know, put you in a better position so that you're not spending money trying to stop others from using your trademark. But that's not the case outside of the U.S. Most countries outside of the U.S. are first to file countries. So if, let's say, you have, you know, your e-commerce site and you're selling to Mexico, it's important to register in Mexico first, because if somebody else has that trademark, even though you're the first to sell the product or provide the services under your trademark, somebody else could actually sue you for infringement, even if they're not using the trademark in that country. So there are implications, and, you know, given that we live in a global commercial world, it's more and more important, more now than ever, to really understand not just what the laws are in the U.S., but outside. And the last one is for copyrights. Copyrights are vest upon creation. So the second you put pen to paper and write that you write the story or you write the poem, you do have copyright protection. But we do encourage everyone to file copyrights, especially for their larger work, because you cannot file for copyright infringement unless you have a registration. And you're not eligible for treble damages unless you have a registration and you have filed for the copyright within 3 months of publication. So what that means is, if you were to file, let's say, your copyright is infringed and you, after the fact, go out and file a copyright registration so that you can file a lawsuit, your damages would be limited to actual damages versus statutory damages, which could be much, much higher and could really work in your favor if somebody's copying, you know, you wrote a book and somebody took excerpts from your book and put it in their book. You would be eligible for much higher damages if you filed in a timely manner.
So in other words, before we do anything, we should make sure we're covered, we're registered. I know when I start Absolutely. With a new client, our contract says, I have an IP clause in all my contracts that say the client owns its intellectual property. It gives us the right to use their IP, trademarks, logos, materials in our public relations effort. It doesn't infringe on it. And because they say they own it, if we get swept up in one of those lawsuits, it falls back on them because they told us yes. They had it. You know, that's the old indemnification clause.
Absolutely. I mean, for any contractual obligation you have, you definitely want to, and if you're making any, you know, statements regarding the protection of your rights or, you know, rightful ownership of the rights, you definitely want to have everything registered. I mean, in any due diligence that would come up, and also, you know, in any indemnification clause, as you just said, the contractor is not going to take on that risk without knowing that they are also fully protected.
Let me ask you a question, because as PR has become more visual and social and content creation, is the content we're creating, the images we created, is that considered copyrights? Is that considered material, part of our intellectual property that we can protect? Or is that kind of out there for everyone to grab, which I know eventually will segue us into artificial intelligence, which grabs all of that stuff.
Right. So that's a perfect segue into the topic for today, which is, anything that is created by a human is eligible for copyright protection. So, you know, if you were to create an image from scratch, either as a graphic artist or, a fine artist, and that is a complete, you know, completely of your imagination, that is eligible for copyright protection. If you were to use a base, like a source material, for example, like let's say you wanted to do enhancements on the Mona Lisa, obviously the Mona Lisa is not protected for two reasons. One, because it's too old, so it's in the public domain. But second, even if it were to still be protected, it would not be protected by you. But you know, there's an argument that maybe the enhancements, given that the Mona Lisa is in the public domain, the enhancements you made may be eligible for copyright protection. And that in that scenario, if the copyrights were still valid for the Mona Lisa, that maybe there was some fair use or some transformative use of the underlying work. Images that are created by machines are not eligible for copyright protection under the current copyright laws. And the Copyright Office has been grappling with this topic, I think particularly over the last two or three years when generative AI has really come to the forefront of issues. The Copyright Office has taken the position that something that is not created by humans is not eligible for copyright protection. That said, if one were to use a generative AI tool to create something and then there was substantial human editing or substantial human input, the portions that were done by the human, assuming that they are original, would be eligible for copyright protection. In filing copyright applications for that work, you would have to disclose what was created by AI and what was the human input.
Wow. Crazy. Sounds complicated, but
it's pretty complicated. I do copyright applications all the time. We ask our clients if they've used AI. They say no, so we file it as if they didn't. We ask them to just, make that assertion. But if they were using AI for the base image, we would have to dissect really, what their input was and what the original input was and what the generative AI created, and have to appropriately disclose it to the Copyright Office.
Yeah, I guess so. And then I guess how to figure that out, because AI is changing everything, right? So generative AI, what do we need to know as it's impacting what we're doing?
So I just want to take a minute, and I think I like to always say this whenever I speak about AI, which is I don't personally have an opinion about whether it's good or bad. I think like any new tool, there's going to be a lot of wonderful things that come out because of this. And I think like anything else, humans have find a way to exploit new technology and to do harm. And when we're talking about the intellectual property with respect to AI, I mean, it's just such a small slice of what this new technology is capable of doing and transforming the world. So, what I'm talking about now could be scary for creatives and content creators, but I think there's going to be lots of benefit. And then in the same vein, I think there's going to be lots of harm that has actually nothing to do with intellectual property. So we're talking about a small slice. That said, within the small slice, some of the stats that have really been interesting to me is, I'm misquoting the exact stat. I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but since it came up in conversation, I think it was something like the amount of data that has been created over the last 2 years is like a very high number times all of the data that was ever created in all of the time before that.
Wow.
Because of the way that the AI tools can just create so much content so quickly. So I think one thing, regardless of intellectual property or not, just the existence of generative AI is just making us so much, it's just creating so much more data. And, I think especially for creative people, there's just a disconnect between data and humans. Like, we don't like to think we're just pieces of data or that everything is based on data. But really what generative AI is repurposing data. Every new image, it can be broken down into, numbers and dashes and lines and dots and into code. And so all of that is just turned into data. And so there's this, and it's not very romantic to think that all this creative work is just being distilled down to data.
Yeah, but it is, and it's changing everything. I mean, there was an article in the New York Times recently, Neha, that gave an example of someone asking AI to create a photo using a Joker. And what it got from them were almost branded photos, like the Joker from Batman movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, my thought was, does that mean now, even if you get something from AI and use it, that we have to do our own research to make sure we can use it? It is not somebody's intellectual property, and how do we protect ourselves? Because I do think, and I teach college in the younger generation, I hate to say that, that makes me sound old, but they're more reliant, they're more comfortable with AI. They know what it is, but they also don't have that bandwidth or that world experience to know that what they're getting, it might be because somebody else has it. How do you get that critical thinking?
Yeah, So I think this specifically relates to the marketing world and PR world, so we can jump right into that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can definitely say that there will be benefits of using AI. It's definitely a big time saver. It can help generate ideas. If used properly, it can really enhance research just because of the speed at which these machines can collect data. But certainly, and this is no different than, you know, if you were not to use an AI tool, you know, we have to be able to check the source of the information. And it's kind of difficult with the AI tools because they don't always give you the source. And so there's definitely a push in the AI world, and some of the lawsuits deal with the existing current lawsuits deal with this idea that maybe, you know, the tools can exist, but every time the tool spits out a sentence, it has to, you know, link the source so that the person who's been using the AI generated content can go back and double check the source and, you know, make sure that the source aligns with, you know, a diverse, or the sources are all diverse and that there's no bias in the information because there's only three or four things that the information has been pulled from. But certainly, I mean, anybody who's using AI, especially in the form it's in right now, like, we find it to be advanced, but it is quite primitive. Knowing how to double check the sources and make sure that the information that is being put into the AI-generated content is, in fact, legitimate. And fake news is such a big problem on the internet right now that it's the duty that the person using the tool needs to be able to build into their practices. So for any businesses who are embracing the AI tools and want to incorporate them into their practices, there should be guidelines and investment into learning and training personnel on how to do the appropriate checks on, you know, fact checking and source vetting.
How do you find out if somebody's got a copyright on some information you might have gotten through AI, or on a photo that you might have created for you for your content to put on your Instagram? How do you fact source that to make sure it is not somebody else's?
So here is one of the big challenges, right? Like with a trademark, you can go in and check the trademark office to see if that trademark exists, or you can, you know, do a Google brand search and see if somebody's using that for their brand. But for images, it is quite different. There's no database that you can just, you know, plug the image into that will say, oh, this is copyrighted or not. I mean, one thing that is kind of useful, it's not a perfect science, this is not legal advice, but, you know, if you were to use, I think Bing and Chrome both have tools where you can drag and drop an image into the search tool, and it will pull up, you know, other images like that or the same image on you doing like an internet image search. And if you're lucky, you may be able to find that image actually has been taken exactly from something else. You can link and see if there's any copyright information there. But that's really about it. That's what we have so far. I mean, I'm hoping maybe one day the Copyright Office can digitize itself completely so you can do a drag and drop copyright search. But right now, that does not exist. And that, you know, that would be a complete overhaul of the system with the Copyright Office. So that's a little bit more difficult to tell. And that is why, you know, the likelihood of a human creating something identical or copied exactly on something that already exists without ever seeing it is quite low. The ability for a machine to create something that looks like something else that already exists because it has seen it based on the way that machines learn is obviously quite high, because that's the only language they have to create this image to begin with. And definitely there is a risk for people who are using the tools and using the content that's been created in terms of copyright infringement. But I think the real issue is going to end up being, you know, are the machines themselves, the companies who are creating the machines, who's the one that's creating committing the copyright infringement? Is it the machines and the way that they're taught, or is it the output and, you know, the PR agency that's using an image that was created from AI? I think from a big picture perspective, it's much more efficient to have the companies be liable for this, given that they are the ones who are teaching the machines how to read and really are the ones who control how the machines are being taught versus, you know, every content creator out there being held liable for one small, you know, one piece of infringement out of all the work that they're doing. So there's a certainly risk. I'm not minimizing the risk. I'm just putting out there, I think overall, it really should be up to the machines and the companies creating the machines and the AI tools to really be able to help us all out to make sure we're not infringing on each other's copyrights.
That's only if they want to, but that's a whole nother show. So does that put the onus on companies or brands? You know, even if you're a small brand, to say, I need IP police, in essence, and lawyers to go and keep searching to see that other people have not taken my copyrights or my trademarks and misappropriating them or tweaking them. They're still close, but having done that and using them for their own marketing purposes, for their own sales purposes, for their own, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Benefit. So I think we're going to run into a sort of a two-prong issue, which is the more that brands rely on using AI, the less value that intellectual property will have, because things that are created by AI are not protected by intellectual property. So, you know, if, let's say, in 5 years, and this is obviously a completely made-up number, but let's say in 5 years, 90% of people's logos were made using AI, generative AI, and there was very little human touch put onto that, then, you know, let's say 5 years later, all of those logos have been infringed upon. It doesn't actually matter, because those original logos didn't have any protection. I mean, they would have, sorry, trademark protection, but maybe not copyright protection. So I think there's also, in a way, a battle that's going to end up happening around authenticity and around making sure things still are created by humans, because they sort of have less value. They might have more value vis-a-vis data and how fast we can create things and feeding the algorithms for social media and LinkedIn and all those things. But inherently, like anything, the more you create something, the less value each piece of it will have, because there's just, it's too saturated.
I think most people don't know that. They don't realize that, you know, they think they have a brand or a logo and I can protect it. And it's who created it on whether or not you can protect it. I think there needs to be a lot of education on that, because this is new to me. I think most people don't know that. So I could see this becoming super problematic going forward.
Yeah, and let me just correct that. The logo as a trademark can still be protected.
Okay.
I'm talking about the copyright within the logo. So
okay.
Yeah, sorry, I should clarify that. Yeah, we're really talking about the copyrights. The trademark, you know, if I create something using AI and I come up with the logo and I'm the only one using that logo in connection with my goods and services, I might be fine from a trademark perspective. My logo is trademarked. But if that logo is based on somebody else's copyrighted work, somebody could potentially have a claim against me for copyright infringement, which is separate than trademark.
It's still pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, it is scary. But I do think that there's going to be pressure on some of the AI companies to do a better job of helping us, because, you know, it's not in anybody's interest. First of all, it's very expensive to police intellectual property. So to your question, for your first question about, you know, do people need their attorneys to go out and be policing? Yeah, that would be great. But for example, every time there's an infringement, sending a demand letter or doing an internet takedown request, like, that could be very expensive and a spend that many companies just don't have in their budget. But beyond that, you know, might not even be a good use of their dollars if down the line half of their own content is also AI generated.
Right.
But so I do think there's going to be pressure. I mean, I none of the cases that have been filed with respect to the copyright infringement claims, I think there's currently about 13 of them. None of them have been, there's no orders that have come, there's no court opinion that is telling us what's happening yet. But most of these were filed in 2023. I've been keeping an eye out on them. My team has been keeping an eye out on them. But we are very interested to see how this will all shake down with the courts, because once we have some court instruction, that will give us, you know, give the companies different instructions on how they need to proceed. But the law is always behind the technology. This is always the case. And so I think it's going to be some time before we have any clear instruction as to how this will all play out. So, you know, I don't want to discourage people from embracing the tool. Certainly it's helpful to know new technology. I can't imagine that we're putting this back into the box. But that said, I think it's important for, and, you know, I'm not the best at doing this. As a lawyer, I don't use AI, generative AI, for anything. We're not allowed to use it at our law firm. There's been, you know, a couple of instances where lawyers have tried to use it, and
it hasn't worked
the AI
well.
Has hallucinated. Hasn't worked well, yeah. So, you know, we can't do it, or maybe there are lawyers who are doing it. I'm not doing it. So I'm not the best person to ask about, like, how to properly learn about prompts and all of that. But from what I understand, you know, learning how to use the tool is going to put you in the best position to use it ethically. And I think specifically for PR, for example, you know, knowing how to prompt the machines to give you at least the bias output, or, you know, still making sure that there's diverse opinions. And then if there's, you know, language in the content that's created, still having somebody go back and double check. So, you know, you might not find the exact source that the AI tool used to come up with that sentence, but a Google search and doing your own research may help you verify the factual content of the AI generated content.
Right. And I've done a couple shows on that. I've had Mark McClellan, who talks about ethics in AI, and also Tony D'Angelo, because it is a problem for PR people to know how to use AI ethically and responsibly. But we also need to know, certainly from the IP perspective, what that all means.
At the end of the day, the machine created content is not going to be copyrighted. So if it's being used to generate ideas, which I think is sort of the best case scenario for anyone, use it to generate ideas, because it can basically do a Google search. I'm doing air quotes you can't see, but a Google search much faster than, like, for example, a human could. And then it just synthesizes all that information. But that's just the beginning. It shouldn't be the end, and it shouldn't be the goal, but that's the end. And, you know, lawyers have the advantage. They're allowed to take their time to make sure that they are able to give their clients, you know, vetted opinions that don't have a lot of holes in them. That's our responsibility. Other industries have more pressure to put out more content all the time, like, you know, Instagram and social media. There's just so much pressure to put out content all the time that I think where there's going to be a breakdown, and where there likely is probably already a breakdown, is where people want to use the tools and then they don't have time, because of the pressure of creating content, to actually sit there and go back and check or edit or do all the things that they would have done had this tool not existed to begin with. And I think from an IP perspective, like, the best thing you can do to protect yourself is use the tool. I mean, it's good to understand new technology, but understand it's just a tool like anything else, right? This is equivalent to 20 years ago, you couldn't just do a Google search. You had to go to the library and synthesize the information and figure out what it all meant, right? Then we could, because of search engines, we could do that all online. But at the end of the day, there was still synthesizing information, putting that human touch into it, putting that human, the nuance of what it means to communicate like a human, into that information. And so if you view it with that lens, like, this is just a new tool, but still at the end of the day, like, the professionals are going to do their job and edit and make sure everything is accurate. You know, I think then you're in a pretty good position.
Sounds perfect. And Neha, that's a perfect place to end this, because we're out of time. Thank you so much for being here today. I've learned so much talking to you. So appreciate it.
Of course. This is great. And if anyone has any questions or wants to have a chat, you can find me at CSG Law. And the name is Neha Balani. I'm in the IP group. You should not have a hard time finding me. And the email address is nbhalani@csglaw.com.
Great. Thank you so much. That's Let's Talk PR and More for today. You can find more information about the show and about me at Goldman Communications Group's website, www.goldmanpr.net. And if you want to hear the show again, you can listen to the podcast, which is posted on Goldman Communications Group's website, as well as on your favorite podcast sites, including Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to talking PR and more with you all again next week.